Hi, welcome to valuationpodcast.com, a podcast and video series about all things related to business and valuation. My name is Melissa Gregg, and I'm a valuation expert witness and divorce mediator in St. Louis, Missouri. I have the privilege to interview Randy Kessler today, who is a high-profile divorce attorney in Atlanta, Georgia, for over 30 years. He's a founding partner of KS Family Law, a 30-person family law firm in Atlanta. He represents entertainers and athletes. He's wrote Divorce, Protect Yourself, Your Kids, and Your Future. He is the former chair of the family law section of the American Bar Association. He is a professor at Emory Law School, and he is the founder of Starsona, which provides personal videos from stars to their fans. Randy, we are so lucky to have you here, and we're going to be talking about virtual court, divorce mediation, and valuation during COVID-19 pandemic. So we've learned a lot during the past 8 or 9 months. But I think that, you know, what people kind of want to know is what is the status right now of Zoom trials and virtual court? You're in Georgia, I'm in Missouri. We can kind of talk about what's happening in both.
You know, it's interesting in both our professions, you know, we don't say that we work at our profession. We say we practice, right? I've got a trial practice. You got evaluation practice. And nowhere is that more relevant than no time has that been more relevant than right now, because we're practicing, we're learning, you know, sort of on the job. And you mentioned I teach at Emory Law School, and I teach a family law trial class. And in the middle of the class, COVID hit. And so we weren't going to have live jury trials. We do jury divorces in Georgia for some reason. And they had to learn how to do it. And the students were upset. They wanted a live trial experience. And I remember saying to them, and I just talked to the dean of Emory about how we explained it to him. We said, look, you're growing up when the world is brand new. And it's easier for you than for old lawyers like me that have to adapt, right? When you start off, if you graduate law school or you get your evaluation certificates and there's a brand new set of rules the day you graduate, you're ahead of everybody that's already been using the old rules. So, you know, it is a new world and I'm learning and you're learning and we're all learning, but it's surprisingly working better than we could have ever expected. And I hate to be a silver lining guy in this terrible time, but there are a lot of silver linings, at least in my practice area. You know, who wants to be in court with their ex when they can sit at home and be on a video and do a mediation or a trial? So there are a lot of, you know, silver linings. I don't want to say benefits. I don't want to say that COVID and the pandemic are in any way a good thing, but we've gotten some good things out of it.
Well, and I think it was a learning curve, you know. So if we really look at, a lot of us had to take that learning curve to get online, to be more efficient, to figure out how to even show exhibits or produce documents and have it be kind of, you know, not seamless. But I think once we got through the learning curve, though, some of the things that right. I think happened is we became more efficient.
It's better in some ways.
You know, yeah. We're not waiting around. And from an expert witness point, I don't necessarily just have to sit at court waiting for something to happen. I can just show up online.
You want to know who loves it? Judges. Because think about it from the judge's point of view, right? My job is to make a judge's life easier, make it simple for a judge. And if you're the judge and you're in court and two lawyers come in and the judge says, I'd like to introduce exhibit number three. Where's exhibit number three? Exhibit number four. And you're looking for it and there's a delay. Now, you know what we do? And I know in Missouri, they're not doing so many trials. In Georgia, we're blowing them right out of the water. We're going right through and doing them virtually. And across the country, there's a mix. But what judges are requiring is that we send our exhibits in ahead of time in a PDF form in one of two ways, either separate exhibits or in one big PDF that's listed 1, 2, 3, 4. So the judge's staff has the exhibits. And when we say we'd like to refer to exhibit number two, the judge's staff just pulls up exhibit number two and it's there. And guess what? Everyone can see it. Everyone's got the same version. There's no bad copies or good copies or delay while I walk it up to the court and give his, oh, judge, I didn't make enough copies. Can I have your staff person please make a copy for opposing counsel? None of that. It's just judges love it because it makes lawyers prepare better and be more efficient. And it's the way we should always be. But sometimes a little kick in the butt makes us be even better.
Well, and I think that some of it is just there aren't as many shenanigans, if you will. You know, there's not like there's a hidden exhibit and I'm going to catch you and we're going to get that. You know, it is more sort of like, here's what I have. Here's what you have. Let's talk about it. You know, so it's a little bit interesting dynamic. So what do you think some of the lessons that you've learned from COVID-19 for online court hearings? Like, how have you become more efficient in this process?
So it has made me realize exactly what I've always tried to understand and tried to do, which is be prepared, right? Trials are not won by winging it. And there are always lawyers that are just wonderful at walking into court and persuading the judge and charming the judge. That's not how you win. That's not how you get a successful result. So you've got to be very, very prepared. You know, there's nothing more embarrassing than being in court in front of a client and something going wrong. On the other hand, judges now more focused on the facts. You know, there might be a lawyer who's disorganized, fumbles through his or her papers, can't find the notes or the exhibit or the budget or the valuation or your report, Melissa, and the judge gets frustrated. It's not the client's fault. The facts may dictate that the client should get everything the lawyer is asking for, but the disorganization negatively affects people. This is now making us be more organized, and we have to learn. You know, the choice was retire and not practice family law anymore, or learn how to do Zoom and other online events. And it's not been hard. And I'm also very lucky that our firm, we have a bunch of young lawyers. So we've got, you know, four or five people that are under 30 years old, lawyers, and they love it. You know, to them, it's more fun that way. And they're actually doing more because you can be in court in one county in the morning and in another county in the afternoon. Whereas before, we'd have to just cancel and reschedule the second court date because there was no way with Atlanta traffic, we were going to make it from Fulton County to Gwinnett County in less than an hour or two.
Well, and what we're trying to say to experts is that you really have to treat it like you are in court. So you need to show, you know, like don't, I mean, you can do whatever, you can wear whatever you want. That's fine. But we advise wear proper clothing. It's just in case you have to stand up, right? You know, try to be in a situation where you're not, distractions are fine for Zoom happy hours and Zoom meetings, but it's not okay if you're doing an online deposition. Like you have to be somewhere where you are not going to be distracted, but you also have to show up like it's court. And I think that this is interesting because we talked about this several months ago, that you were building an in-person kind of mock courtroom. And so I kind of want to show people what, you know, this is one way to start to get ready for what may be the future of litigation, of divorce, or any type of trials is going to be, that if we can't all go into the courtroom, we can at least, you know, if you and I were on a case and we were coming in with your clients, we're now in what we know as court and we act accordingly. And so tell us a little bit about what you guys built.
I will. And I do want to talk, just want to finish up about, you know, dressing for court. Look, I'm not in court, but I'm dressed nice for you because my reputation is important. You know, first impressions are important. You got to make a good first impression. So as for court, so we represent some high wealth folks, and high wealth folks would typically, just like anybody, would typically not prefer to be in a crowded courthouse where everybody's hearing their business and looking at them. And so we started building this before the pandemic, and we finished it during the pandemic to have private judging. Now, it sounds fancy, private judging, but really it's just arbitration. And most states now allow some form of arbitration. Some states, like Georgia, allow you to arbitrate custody and financial issues. And so you don't really need a fancy courtroom like this to do it. You can do it in a mediation room or in a conference room. But, you know, if people are going to pay us to present the case, I want it to feel like court. I also want to be able to practice with my clients, so that if they have to go to a courthouse, they sort of felt what it was like to be cross-examined in a real courtroom. But I think now with COVID, you're going to see a lot more firms. And of course, the big firms, the 1,000 person, the 400 person firms have their in-house courtrooms. The small firms, we're a 15 lawyer firm, which is pretty big for family law. But, you know, most family lawyers are 2, 3, 4 people. They're probably not going to build a courtroom, but I bet you're going to see more and more of them doing it or sharing a courtroom because it's the way of the future. You know, mm-hmm. Courthouses are already overwhelmed before COVID. Now they're doubly overwhelmed because of the backlog. People are not trying cases yet. Do you want to go stand in line through security and wait on crowded elevators and have a judge who's got 1,000 cases to get through? Or do you want to pay a private judge who can talk to you privately and you can say, "Judge, I need to take a break. Can we come back tomorrow?" And the judge says, "I'm getting paid $400 or $500 an hour. I'm your employee today. You guys tell me what you want me to do." And so there are a lot of benefits to this private judging thing. And I know we're going to talk a little bit more about mediation and how they can use you. And I think it's much easier for an expert to be involved in mediation or in private arbitration or private judging than in a real court situation.
Yeah, and a couple other online, like doing online depositions and such. I think one way to prepare from an expert standpoint is traditionally we just, you know, as you're like a seasoned expert or you're a seasoned attorney, we don't prep as much, right? If I know you know what you're doing and you know what I'm doing, like I might tell you, I might give you some questions to ask the other person in the deposition or something like that. But I think that the interesting part is I've tried to go back and encourage that we do some of that prep work, you know, that we are on the same page, or in some situations, you know, are the attorneys in the room with the witness, you know, it, because then we could communicate or do something like that. But most of the time, it's also getting yourself kind of up to speed on a lot of these online presentation platforms. You know, not all the courts are using Zoom. There are other platforms, but there are ways to like outline or highlight, you know, if we're looking at the screen, highlight something. And even the ways of presenting, when we created reports, they were huge report, you know, they're written in Word, right? They're 8x11. You put an 8x11 up here and you can't read anything. So you really have to start presenting it at how is it going to be seen online. And if you don't practice that, if you don't go in and say, oh, I didn't know how it was going to be online, and we're sitting here for 15 minutes while you put it together and you waste other people's time, I think that's the harder part. You don't want to be the person that's wasting the time. Right. I would much rather it be somebody else.
No, it's what we said before. It's all preparation. And now you're really going to look stupid if you're not prepared and your internet doesn't work or your lighting is bad or your whatever it is. So you're absolutely right in prepping. And look, we talk about silver linings. How about this? How about your practice session can be recorded, right? You can record on Zoom and then you can practice with the client. You can take a client's deposition. We get somebody from the other side of the office that doesn't know much about the case to really grill them. And they can watch themselves and see how they reacted, and they can see their facial reactions. I mean, there's so many benefits now that didn't exist before, but you're right. Also, timing, right? Trying to find a day where we can all get together. Well, I can't be there. I've got to pick up my kids. I've got another court date. It's a lot easier to say I can finish my call at 10:30 and jump on a 10:45 practice session or deposition or whatever it is. It's just so much easier to schedule things like these. So I wanted to mention, Melissa, we talked also earlier about, you know, the mediation and all the differences with mediation. One thing that we started doing before pandemic, and now we're doing more of it, is letting someone like you talk to the mediator ahead of time, you know, or let my client talk ahead of time. We can schedule various sessions so the mediator can get bits of information on the business valuation, on the tracing, on my client's emotional place where she or he is right then, where on the conflict issues. And then when we start the real negotiations, the mediator's already gotten the input that he or she needs to have an effective mediation. You can schedule things so much easier than in the past. We'd have to all spend the whole day, and I'd sit there waiting for the 2 hours while the other side's in there talking to the mediator about all the problems with my client. And then the expert on the other side is telling the mediator everything about their efforts to get information. And then the mediator comes to me and says, well, they can't value it because they didn't have this document. And so it goes nowhere. It's an impasse. We go back home. We get all the rest of the documents. We bring them. You know, this makes it so much more efficient. I mean, it just, I hate to be positive about such a horrible thing in the world, but let's take some positives from it. The system is going to be more efficient and the clients are going to pay less money instead of wasting a full day waiting for the other side to finish talking to the mediator. Mediator can be Zooming with the other side. I can go cook breakfast and then I can come back in an hour and say, ready for us? It's just so much more efficient. And I don't have to charge the client for the wait time. There's just so many nuances that we never could have anticipated, but they're sort of obvious now.
Well, but we were used to doing like an all-day trial or an all-day mediation. The problem is we didn't kind of encompass like the clients. 8 hours of sitting in an emotional trying state is too much. It's just too much. So like segmenting it so that we can say, okay, let's just take 2 hours. Like that's even for people who have some attention issues, like that's about as long as they can last, you know, take 2 hours, let's talk tomorrow, you know, and I think it gets everybody so that they're fresh, as opposed to at the end of an 8 hour day, you're, I don't care. Take it, give it.
Right,
don't
which
care.
Is terrible. You know, it's funny because I do a presentation sometimes for other state bars on resolving cases out of court. And one of my first slides says, you know, do you typically as a lawyer get together with the mediator and say, let's just talk with the lawyers first and leave the clients in the room so that we can sort of cut to the chase. And then I show a picture of how the client feels and it's sitting on the end of a dock, you know, alone again. And the clients are sitting there in a strange lawyer's office or mediation office waiting while the lawyers are talking about their friendships and other stuff that you can't ignore. You have to say, how are you? How are the kids? So lawyers are chum, happily getting along. Clients are left alone. Now we could do that 2 days ahead of time and say, let's have a pre-mediation or pre-trial conference with the judge with just the lawyers. And the clients don't sit there thinking, you know, I'm waiting here, wasting my time, and it's my case. So you're absolutely right. There are a lot of benefits to this. And, you know, and we're seeing more and more of it. People are now that the pandemic has lasted more than a few months, you know, a lot of people thought it would be in and out and over and done. People are realizing, I can't wait forever to get a divorce. I was waiting. And so now they're calling and saying, I understand Zoom mediation, Zoom trials are happening. Can we move forward? And I feel much stronger saying, yeah, I don't see any difference. In fact, there's some benefits procedurally and logistically to having done it now instead of 2 years ago.
Yeah, well, and let's talk about that, because some people are saying that the divorce rate has gone down. Some people are saying that the divorce rate is going to skyrocket. So do you feel like the divorce rate has increased, or are people waiting to file for divorce until after COVID-19 ends, if it ever ends?
So I see two things. But the first thing is, we definitely got more calls once the pandemic hit. We got a lot more calls from existing clients, from new clients, people that just wanted to talk. And that's normal. That's therapeutic. I've got to make a change. I've got to do something. My life is miserable. Now it's even more miserable because he or she is home with me all day long. So we got, certainly, I think those calls have increased for all family law attorneys. But then we see two things. One is people that say, I need out fast and I need to be ready to go as soon as this pandemic ends or when I can get some money and buy a house. And so those rates have gone up. But we've seen other people that have done check-ins. They've had a consultation in March, another consultation in September, and now they're calling and saying, I want to file at the end of the year, or I want to wait until after Christmas, but then I want the papers to be ready to go. So I think the rates are the inquiries are up. I think the retentions have been average or lower for a lot of lawyers. But people are going to always want a divorce, fortunate or unfortunate. This sometimes brings it to a head. And some people sometimes realize, I can get along with her. I can get along with him. Now that we're home, we've really had some heart-to-heart discussions. And some people go the other way. So it's just sort of, you know, we've used this term for 30 years that I've been practicing, which is divorce is sort of a recession-proof, right? People are going to get divorced, not because it means more money, because no one has more money after divorce. They have half or less. But it's because they want to move on and they're unhappy. And this unhappiness that's being brought about by the pandemic, I think it's no question it's making more people consider separating and moving on in their life.
Well, and even if they're in, you know, because we had a lot of people that were kind of in the middle of getting divorced, and they had trial dates that have been moved and moved and moved and moved, right? In some cases, because it's a very complex situation, in some cases, maybe the attorneys are not comfortable with continuing to move forward or representing their clients in an online like way. But the reality is that people are going to continue to me, it actually started to force litigators, you know, like big time litigation attorneys that just take everything to trial. It kind of had to force them to come back a little bit and say, you know what, let's figure out a way that we can maybe settle this, you know, because
it's sort of hard to say, if you don't take my offer, we're going to court.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll wait.
See you in 2022. But yeah, so One of the things that I think is interesting is how are you, you know, you deal with a lot of high net worth divorces. So how are you working to get the high net worth divorces settled if you can't get a court date for another year? But in Georgia, you guys are actually kind of just continuing to move forward.
We are, but you know, I think as historically has been the case, I think most high net worth folks are high net worth because they know how to spend their money wisely, and spending it on divorce lawyers and experts is not always the wisest use of their money. So we have represented people worth hundreds of millions of dollars where their entire fee was $20,000 or $30,000, which still sounds like a lot of money, but comparatively, we've had cases like that where it's hundreds of thousands of dollars. Because if you're splitting $50 million and you only get 24 instead of 25 million, I mean, look at the Bezos divorce. She walked away with $35 billion. They were worth $135 billion. Is that fair? From the outside, it looks like it wasn't fair. It looks like, why shouldn't it be 50-50? I don't know. Maybe it was fair. Who knows? But who cares, right, when you get that much money? So on one hand, people are more willing to settle. And if you have the financial ability to move on, which is what I think divorce is about, and you can find a new place to live, a new set of friends, and you have the financial resources, then you're going to fight less about it. But otherwise, we're going back to that courtroom that you showed earlier, and we're doing a lot of private judging. People that want to control their destiny and they want to end their marriage can hire a private judge, a senior divorce lawyer to arbitrate or to decide their matter, and they will get finality. And the nice thing is that if you're in court, most judges are dealing with people that don't have a lot of assets, right? The average client, more than half across the country of divorce clients, don't have lawyers. They're pro se folks, so the trials are messy. The judges are struggling. How do I make him pay her or her pay him when neither of them have enough money to make it even when they were together? I mean, just terrible, tough decisions. We're just blessed that the situations we have, it's really more about principle, you know? And at that point, there comes a time where you say, to heck with principle, to heck with the fight, I just want out. So it's sort of easier with folks that have money to be able to divide the finances. Of course, custody issues, people will fight left and right forever, and they'll spend every last dime to make sure they have a quality relationship or quality time with their child.
And that's where I think in the high net worth divorces is where we were seeing two experts be hired. So one for each side, we duke it out. Of course, we're millions of dollars apart, you know, because everybody's not advocating, but obviously looking at a position that's favorable for their client in some respects, right?
But I mean, look, you're in a field that's not precise science. You've got variables, and both can be arguable. So, yeah, that's why experts like you are vital for cases that where there's a few million dollars or more.
And what we're seeing is really a movement towards hiring one expert by both parties. And how do you kind of functionally do that job? But it sometimes is just to help the process move along, right? Because if you're going to continue to just fight about certain things, you're not going to be able to get it settled. So that's one way that we've seen it happen. Another way I think is, and I don't know if you're seeing this happen, but are more people moving towards divorce mediation or collaborative divorce, or does it matter?
Well, let me answer both those. Number one, with the joint expert, you know, there's a philosophical problem, and we like using a joint expert. The problem is if the joint expert comes down and doesn't find a result favorable to your client, or your client doesn't like the result, then why didn't we have our own expert? So I have to worry about that as a lawyer. You know, they have to realize ahead of time, like or not like the result, you will be stuck with this joint expert. And once they get that, they're okay with it. The trade-off is they save a lot of money, and the joint expert is usually somebody respectable that they're, you know. So sometimes we do a joint expert and we reserve the right to hire our own afterwards if we disagree, but just as a safety net.
But there will also be sometimes when I would say, you know, if you're the out spouse, right, or you may not have total control, you know, sometimes it's hard. The one spouse that has all the control of the money will just cut off all the money to that out spouse. So sometimes I say as the out spouse, if the other party is going to hire an expert, well, go ahead and let them and see what it comes down, because normally you should exchange reports at the same time. But if that person doesn't have any money, say, okay, husband, okay, wife, go get the expert. We'll see where they come out and then I'll hire somebody.
Right, because if it comes out favorable, you can say it was their expert that showed what I wanted. And if it's not favorable, you still have an avenue to attack it and impeach it. I agree 100%.
Yeah.
And there's some judges in the country that are now appointing their own experts, saying this case has enough money. You are going to use marital money, and you're going to pay this expert that I just saw in a case last week that did a really good job, made my life easier as a judge. I want that expert to be the expert in your case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now, we're getting appointed by the court quite more often now, because sometimes they're even fighting about who the expert is. And so if the court, if the court's like, well, I know that Melissa will do it fairly, or, you know, at least reasonably, then we'll go with her. So it's been helpful.
Yep. And as for your question on mediation, so even before pre-pandemic, before COVID, you know, judges love mediation because if they have 100 cases on their docket and they send them all to mediation, and if 50 of them go away because of mediation, that just made the judge's life easier. So judges are inclined to almost always want to encourage mediation or sometimes order it. And in many cases, you cannot even get a trial without saying the following words to the judge: Your Honor, we tried mediation and it failed. You know, if you can't say you even tried it, then the judge is probably going to make you consider it. So mediation is definitely coming a long way. You also have to try mediation if for no other reason than to show the judge that you tried, that your client was willing to go to mediation. You don't know what's going to happen. There are lots of benefits to mediation aside from the possible settlement. There are benefits like you get some discovery, you learn things. You know, if the other side wants you to accept $1 million as the full final settlement, and I say to the other side, why in the world would my client accept $1 million? Well, either they're not going to tell me and we'll go to trial, or if they think they can convince me, they're going to say, because we have this photograph of your client doing this and we have this bank account we discovered, at least now I know, and I can tell my client, now maybe you should accept the million, or I know what to defend, or I say to the other lawyer, you're misinformed. I'm glad you showed me that. Let me explain to you what happened. That money was in that account for one day, and now that money is in this other account that we've provided to you. So the $1 million in this account is the same $1 million you have in that account if you look at the dates. So mediation helps you get through a lot of the stuff that sometimes you look and find at trial and you say, oh no, I made a mistake. That's not an extra $1 million. That's the same $1 million that was somewhere else. And when your experts can talk, and of course, that's what mediations usually are about for us, experts like you talking to the other expert, figuring out why we're so far apart, and then coming back and telling me and my client, Randy, I think that maybe we shot too high because their argument is pretty persuasive, even though I think it's arguable. But they probably have a better argument, or they have a worse argument, and stick to your guns. You know, those kind of things are valuable to me as a lawyer, to have an expert telling me they've talked to the other side, they've seen the glaring errors of the other side's ways, or they recognize something that they could have used a different variable that they're a little worried about. And that, you know, that's
well, what they're doing. I think that people don't understand always that there are times like you're in the middle of a litigation, you've hired an attorney, your spouse has hired an attorney, you can still kind of during this time go and get a mediator that would work with all of you to try to explain what could happen in court and give some clarity. Because sometimes you have, you know, attorneys that aren't telling their clients, you know, the downside if you go to court, right? Or their client is just unreasonable. And so it takes kind of a third party to say, sorry, you're unreasonable. And sometimes that moves it. But mediation doesn't have to just involve one mediator. It could be co-mediation. It could be a group of people that kind of help you. But
it could be a mediation. You could say one day is wife, next day is husband. Mm-hmm. Then we're going to do a joint session. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. And look, I like to think that I'm a good lawyer and I know what I'm doing and I'm properly advising my clients. So when we go to mediation, my hope is the mediator will explore the other side's position and explain to them why they're wrong. Mm-hmm. But it could be me. It could be us. It could be something we have wrong too. You'd rather fix those problems before trial every time. Mm-hmm. You don't want to find out that you're wrong in trial. And you want the other side to find out they're wrong ahead of time and give them a chance to correct it, because if you can settle without litigating, even better. And most importantly, maybe to me as a litigator, is I feel much better going to trial when I know I've done what I can to settle the case. If I've given it my best and I've tried to explain to the other side why it's in their best interest to also settle, and they said no, and I feel confident in our position, I sleep better at night. I feel better about having a trial because now I couldn't have done anything else.
Yeah, because there are some situations that you can mediate 75, 80% of the issues, and you're just going to have a few issues that are outstanding that may have to go to trial or may have to go to court. You're still lowering your cost. But I also think that people kind of incorrectly assume that if you do mediation, I'm going to do mediation because I don't want to involve attorneys. And I'm like, yeah, so that's not really how that works.
You better have your lawyers there, or you're going to show it to a lawyer who's going to say you made a mistake. Get the lawyers there to sort of clear it. But yeah. You know what else, Melissa? Sometimes at the mediations, the parties wake up and they realize we're spending a lot of money. Let's just settle it ourselves. Or, you know, they're in a cocoon. My client comes to me, feels very confident because I'm building her confidence. And then we go and see there's another side to the story. And I say, well, you never told me about this. And she goes, well, you didn't ask. Or the other side realizes that maybe everything they've been feeling comfortable with, you know, because they've been safe in their lawyer's office or their lawyer's environment. Now, when they're confronted with their past conduct and I'm making a big stink about it, better to do that in private first and give them a chance to say, yeah, I don't want to do this anymore, than to just do it in trial. We go to trial, I win, I feel good. My client gets a lot of money, but we might have destroyed somebody, and that's never a good thing. It doesn't help the family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are always issues like that. But I think that it's pretty clearly, you know, in the past, kind of pre-pandemic, it was litigation or mediation, or, you know, we have these others, collaborative and other types of things. And now I feel like it's just all a hybrid, like online, in-person, mediate, you know, settling. It's like all of it together.
You've been around, Melissa, because, you know, there are times even in trial where the judge says, let's just take a break because I see where this is going. And I'm not telling you how I'm going to rule, but unless you have some really good evidence to disprove what they just said, I think it's in your best interest to go talk about settlement. We have court, you know, and that's sort of, is that unconstitutional or improper? No, it's justice. And, you know, there are times when you have to say, judge, you will find that what they said is wrong, and please bear with us, and you'll see. And I appreciate you telling me what you're concerned about so that I can address it. You know, but there's sometimes when I say, well, if that's the way the judge feels, then my client at least heard what the judge is going to do and gives him or her a chance to save themselves and you know, create their own destiny instead of leave it up to a judge who is giving us a tell, saying, you know, I heard that your husband cheated. I heard that, you know, you supported the family and supported his bad habits. Doesn't matter. I'm still going to divide it down the middle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and some of the things that I've had to do during this pandemic is kind of develop strategies for settling divorce cases during COVID-19. And I think that, you know, if you have any suggestions, you know, now the experts, you know, even if you've hired two experts, sometimes they would talk, sometimes they wouldn't talk. You know, we're talking more, we're trying to work through from an expert position, you know, two different experts, what some of the issues are. But I know that there are probably even more strategies that you have because you're heavily in litigation and you got to come up with some ideas.
Yeah. So look, the age old, you know, Latin phrase, you know, prepare for battle to get peace, right? In parisi bellum, whatever it is. Yes, you can't just go in and say, please give me what I want. You've got to be able to convince the other side that you will get what you want if you have to, and you'll spend a lot of money to do it. I think that's sort of, you know, you got to gauge your client. And it's a lot of, you know, moving parts. Who is the other party? Who is the other lawyer? Who is the judge? You know, and you have to figure out, and that's what's fascinating to me about family law. It's not one size fits all. They all may have the same dimensions as a jigsaw puzzle, but the pieces are cut differently. They're sized differently. They're colored differently. There are all sorts of differences. You got to figure out what makes sense for this puzzle and put it together. Mediation helps you do that. You know, sitting back and thinking, how is this going to look when I paint this picture? Is it going to look persuasive? I think mediation, alternative dispute resolution, is playing a bigger and bigger part in that. So no question, we're looking at things a little more carefully. We're able to focus on things. I also don't have people running into my office saying hi. So I'm actually hyper-focused when I'm, you know, looking at stuff. It's a lot of quiet. You know, our office is open. We do have people coming in and out, but of our 30 people on staff, we're probably 5 to 6 or 7 people per day on average in the office, because why come in if you don't have to? We're doing everything virtually. Most clients now, I think even after the pandemic, are going to now say, may I have a Zoom consultation instead of coming in person, you know?
We'll absolutely. Well, and I think that one thing that we're seeing is that, you know, in the past in litigation, we would maybe wait to do depositions, right? We would wait to get closer to the trial. We would wait for this and that because it would be expensive and we didn't want to do, you know, I'm seeing that we're kind of pushing though, especially if I'm on the side that that can prove it, you know, can prove that some asset is separate, can prove some tracing. And it's like, why are we waiting and fussing and all about this? Why don't we just do the deposition and say, yes, let's do the deposition. Let her show you what we have and how we've proved it. And now can we get to a settlement? So I'm actually, and the depositions, like we've said through this whole thing, are less expensive because I'm just showing up on camera, maybe sometimes in a socially distant conference room, but it's still a lot cheaper because you got to get those answers, you know, and we got to show them, hey, we did trace this. We right. did prove it out. Why are we waiting and like holding our cards?
That's right. It's another form of reality testing. You know, some people have to be smacked with reality before they're going to accept reality. Some people, and I want to leave politics out of it, but some people don't accept results. Some people don't accept, you know, facts. Some people don't accept, and it's on both sides. I'm not talking one side or the other, but, you know, the bottom line is until there's a confrontation of some sort, and, you know, hopefully it's not trial, but a confrontation, whether it's at mediation, whether it's in a deposition of Melissa Gregg, somebody is going to say, wow, now I see that there is another side to the story, or now I see that I don't have the proof that I thought I had, or that the facts don't back it up. You know, sunlight's the best disinfectant. So when you show people what the facts are, they either accept them, or I learn as a lawyer, this one's going to trial because they're just never going to understand and they're never going to accept my logic. So there's going to be a full trial, and at least I've tried.
Right. And in some instances, if I'm the only expert that has been hired at that point, I'm trying to tell the clients, yes, it's an expense to do a deposition. Yes, it's early or something like that. But the reality is, until I come in and tell the other lawyer, essentially, right, show the other lawyer that we've done the work, we have all of the information, that's when they are able to sit back and say, okay, maybe I do need to talk to my client about settling this.
And more than that, when the other client sees you and says, wow, these aren't just numbers on a piece of paper. This is a professional expert that's well spoken. She's presentable. The judge is going to listen to her. She's persuasive. I mean, that doesn't go away just because it's virtual. In fact, it's now preserved, and you can actually be a little better because you can see your facial reactions when you're talking, and you can orchestrate your appearance a little better than if you're in court and you're late to court and you didn't realize that, you know, my tie is, you know, I can't, if I'm looking at this, I can say, oh my gosh, I look silly. You know, I can fix it. However, I hate this backward mirror stuff, you know, but I can get it done before we go on TV with the judge and no one, it's better, I think.
Absolutely. So, you know, we've talked about this several times, but what do you see the future for virtual trials or online mediation? Do you think it continues? Do you think everybody's just waiting to get back to court? What do you think?
I think the older lawyers are dying to get back to court. It's where they feel comfortable. It's where we've been, you know, happiest in our career, where we are actually litigating and doing what we need to do. And we've tried to settle the case. But I think in-person court is at most in family law going to be a 50-50 proposition. I think criminal trials, they need there. You need to have your right to confront the other side in person and confront the accusing witnesses. I think criminal trials are going to be back to in-person sooner than anything else. Big business dollar cases are probably going to have to be in person. There's so much at stake. But in family law, there's that tension between I want it over, but I want it to be fair. And I hate to say it, but I see oftentimes it's wanting it over is much more important than wanting it to be fair. And I'll tell you, Melissa, I've represented folks that have given away too much money or accepted too little, and they're happier than the other side. And the other side is still unhappy and appealing it and arguing because they didn't want the relationship to end, or they didn't feel like they got to say their piece. So family law is a weird thing. And I think that if you can offer a way, a path to resolution that moves it along and is easily explained to the client. And I think people are getting older, right? The people that are growing up nowadays are used to technology. They're used to doing things virtually. They're used to learning how to install a light bulb by looking at YouTube instead of reading a do-it-yourself book. So people are used to this visual technology. I think it's here to stay. My prediction would be half of all final trials in family law in the future are going to be virtual. And I don't think there's going to be any problem with that. And I think judges are going to feel it's more efficient. And if we say, judge, today can be virtual day, you can stay home and do it from home, why wouldn't they, right? If they can do it. Although there's some judges that want to get out of their home, like there's some people that want to get out of their home. But, you know, all things being equal, I don't see any possibility that we go back to 100% everything is in person in the courtroom. Think of the money the taxpayers save. Less security guards, less problems at the courthouse, less repairs to the elevators, less, you know, toilet paper needed in the bathroom of our public facilities. I mean, there's just so many reasons to not go back to in-person that makes sense.
And the interesting part is that it's actually kind of converted not to how we all know trial is and how we do it best to preserve my reputation and your reputation, but it's actually going back to what, you know, we will keep things that are more beneficial to the clients. And a lot of this efficiency is more beneficial to the clients. And the reality is that we're also just not sitting around wasting our time. But one thing that I wonder is, are we going to have a huge uptick in appeals? So are we going to have people that are saying, I wasn't adequately represented, or that expert stunk and her camera went out all the time and, you know, like it was horrible. Do you think that that's going to happen? Or
I think they're going to be more forgiving. I think the appellate court's going to be very forgiving. You know, there are things you have to learn on the fly. I mean, justice is not a black and white issue. It's not easy to describe. It's sort of, you know, like Justice, you know, Stewart said years ago about pornography in his famous Supreme Court ruling, you know, I can't define it, but I know it when I see it. You know, this was justice. This was fair. The judge gave everyone a chance to figure out how to get their evidence in. And you know what? If you couldn't figure out how to use Zoom and you said, well, I don't want to show this document, but, you know, here's what I do. I hold it up to the screen.
Yeah. Yeah.
It works.
And I think you just have to, like, you know, have like your kid with your kids. Like, I would take a piece of paper and put like one big number, like it's $5 million. You know, like, I mean, it's not like you have to be super creative, but you do have to figure out how to convey information in this type of world. And so it's going to be way more about communication than just sitting back and like, okay, I show up to a courthouse and I do my job and I leave. It's like, how do I communicate this through the screen, basically, and get them a little scared?
But. And it's what people pay us for, right? You know, you go to law school and you learn how to be a lawyer, and they pay you to be a lawyer, but they pay you to present their case and to do it in a good way and make sure the judge is receptive. And we're learning, and, you know, we're going to be good at it, and we better be good at it, because we should tell the client, log on 15 minutes ahead of time. Tell the client, change, if you're on a Zoom call with the court, it shouldn't say Galaxy whatever or iPhone 12 or Mia's iPhone 12. It should say your full name. Mm-hmm. You know, for me, I put Randy Kessler, attorney for the father, attorney for, I put the person's name. So the judge doesn't have to guess and say, I'm Ms. Kessler, you're representing the father. Let me ask you this. Make it easy for the judge. Make sure the judge can find your client. If there are multiple cases, your client better have their name on it. Little things that we learn by experience. Just like in the old days, we learned, tell your client to get to court 30 minutes early. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Because they will not understand the parking deck or the security line. They won't anticipate that. These are things that we learn. We don't learn them in law school. Mm-hmm. We learn them by doing, and that's what people are paying us for. And we better get it right. And we're getting some leniency now because it's a unique period. But I think in a year or two, judges are going to say, "You're a lawyer. You're charging $600 or $700 an hour, and your internet's not working. You don't have a backup plan. You don't have a hotspot. You don't have, you know, two cell phones ready to go just in case. You know, one break. You know, you better be ready.
Yeah,
for people that are paying you that much money." To handle their case.
Yeah. And even document exchange, because when we have done these online depositions, sometimes we give it to the attorneys up front, you know, beforehand. Sometimes we want to just show them as we're in the deposition, but I have to have it ready to be sent. Like, I literally have it pulled up with the zip file or the share file link so that they could just download the documents in case something happens. Like, you have to say, okay, what's plan B, C, and D? And have them be ready at a moment's notice.
You mean like for this podcast, when if we talked about the private courtroom, you just had a picture of the courtroom ready to pull up and it was seamless? I mean, you're not a technology guru. You're an expert, right? Yeah. But yet you knew how to do that and you were ready to handle it. Absolutely. It's what we have to do.
We figure it out. Yeah.
And it's all preparation.
But I think for business, for litigation, for anything, as we go into it, everybody's talking about pivot. I don't really like the word pivot. I think it's weird, but and it's an Excel thing. So, you know, it means something different. But I think that we need to figure out how we can do what we do efficient and effective in this new world, because it's not changing.
Maybe not pivot, adapt, or move forward. Not get stuck in the mud. You know, there's so many cliches. One, two steps forward, one step back. Yeah, I got to get a step back, and I got to get a new computer. I've got to get a new Wi-Fi or a new internet installed. But once I get that, then I'll be advanced. You know, it's all learning. And that's, like we said at the beginning, it's practice. You know, we are practicing law. We're practicing valuation, and we are learning how to do it better and better. And, you know, if you're good, you'll be busy and you'll have clients. And if you're not, you're going to fade away. So you better stay with it, and you better stay up to speed. And hopefully we're all doing that, but, you know.
Absolutely. Well, and we're going to show all of the information that people can connect to you, but, you know, you are still actively doing trials, actively doing depositions, litigation, mediation, all of the above. And in my mind, you really do have to work with people that have all of the possibilities. They're not just like, I can do it like this and that's it. You really have to get the people that are ready to adapt, are actively adapting and saying, you know, this is how we're going to do it. Now, in mediation and things like that, you know, we have an entire process of how we go about co-mediating or working with somebody, working with attorneys and things like that. And everybody's trying to adapt. But I think we just have to be, you know, have grace for everybody, have some understanding that things aren't going to be perfect, but that if you're a professional, it's going to show. Right now, it shows that both of you and I came prepared, came, you know, looking professional and all of those types of things. I think that's what, so that if you have a snafu, you're just like, oh, you know, that doesn't normally happen. Let's work through it. Let's quickly. I've also recommended people having kind of an online assistant, like in the background right now. We'll tell people, but, you know, Marina, who works for me, is in the background. Well, if something happens, you have that person there. Well, if you're in an online deposition and I don't know, you get thirsty or you don't have a pen nearby, you know, like you need somebody that could even de-escalate your stress, right? Because if you're sitting there and you're just stressed and about the technology, you're just going to lose it. Where if you have somebody else there, I think it starts to kind of do things different. But here's also a link to your book, which I think helps people out. Any other things that we should tell people to get prepared for this process?
So look, I don't make a lot of money on the book. I think it's $16, $9 on Amazon. But I just want to tell you, I spent 5 years, 30 years ago writing it, and I didn't finish it because it was not good enough. And I wanted to make sure no one said, why didn't you cover this? 20 years later, I represented a lady who had been, you know, she'd written 100 books and was all over the news and just knew how to. She said, Randy, if you started a book, finish it. And she made me finish it. And it's just, it was before blogs were around, but it's sort of blog form. Do I have to go to a judge? Do I need a jury? What's mediation? Should I leave the house? How do I find a good lawyer? It's the kind of stuff I'd want people to know before they came to hire a lawyer. So there are lawyers across the country that give this out to their clients. It just answers some general questions. And some people obsess about these things and they want to know everything there is. Some people just call and say, Randy, just tell me what I need to know. They don't want to read anything. So if you want some more information about a divorce in general, by all means, I think on the Amazon, I think I make a dollar. So I'm not trying to sell it because I'm going to make money on it, but I think it helps people by all means. But do your own research, you know, trust the people that your friends say. And as far as getting a lawyer, I find that most lawyers know who's good in other fields. You know, if someone calls me and says, I need a business lawyer or I need a tax lawyer, I know who's respected in the profession in my area. If they say I need a great divorce lawyer in LA or Chicago, because I was involved with the American Bar, I know good lawyers there. Find a lawyer that you respect, or ask your friends who they respect, even if it's not a divorce lawyer, and say, who's the best? And then meet with them. And don't just take it as the gospel, whatever they say. Make sure you feel good about talking to them. You know, Melissa, I know you're credentialed. I know you've got all the letters and initials after your name. I'm sure you're great. But you know why I would hire you? Because I like you. You're presentable. It's easy to work with you. Yeah, you have the smarts and you have the background and you'll be, but you know, we're going to be going through this tough situation together, this breakup of this family. You better be doing it with somebody that you enjoy being around, that you feel listens to you. So that's my 30,000, 40,000 foot view.
Yeah. And you can always reach out to, you know, like you might have to pay a fee to meet with somebody for an hour or two. But I think that, you know, the other way is to watch things like this, you know, not this particular one, but if somebody that you're going to hire, well, this particular one too, but if you're going to hire somebody, like try to see how they talk, how they present things, how they show up. And hopefully people are doing more online presentations because what else are you doing? I mean, there's, you know, we're stuck at home, we're stuck in our offices and things like that. But the last thing that I...
Knowledge is power. Yeah. Knowledge is power. It's all there. Just soak it up and learn, because you don't want to go through five divorces before you become an expert. You want to know what to do before your first one.
Well, and you also don't want to go through your second or third divorce attorney because you are not compatible with the first one or two. Because by the time you get to the third one, you're basically sending a little bit of a red flag up to everyone of like, okay, well, who's the difficult piece? Yeah. You... Right, or the attorney.
You know, sooner or later, it's not the lawyer. When someone comes and they say, well, I've been through five lawyers and none of them were good. You know, I can understand there's some bad lawyers. There's some people that are not competent. But when you've been through three, four, five, six, especially if I know them and they're competent, you know.
Yeah, totally understand. So the final thing that we can kind of show is kind of your passion project, which is Starsona. So you want to mention anything about this?
Yeah, big news. So this is Starsona, right? But the big news is Starsona just merged. It is now called MyFanPark.com.
Oh.
If you go to Starsona.com. But we merged with MyFanPark because they are international. They have a good presence in South Africa and Germany and Nigeria and India. So we've doubled the amount of stars. It's a new time for us, and we're excited about it. So by all means, check out MyFanPark.com or Starsona.com, and you will end up in the same place and have your favorite star do a video for you, a happy birthday wish for your kids, or they will do fun stuff. They will name your dog for you. They will interact, one-to-one interactions from your favorite NFL, NBA, reality TV, influencers, TikTokers, whatever it may be, a WNBA.
Which realistically, post-pandemic is an amazing holiday gift, because we can't go see these people anymore. You know, like we can't go to concerts, we can't go to football games, we can't go to basketball games. And so it actually is kind of a cute idea, especially, you know, I have a 9-year-old that's pretty obsessed with some basketball players. So I think it would be an interesting, fun thing for them.
Yeah, plug in the, you know, Miami Heat, see who played for the Miami Heat that's on there. Or plug in Auburn University if you're an Auburn fan. And you'll find LaRon McClain, who was a 2-time NFL Pro Bowler, or Dominic Wilkins, or there's just tons of people that, you know, you can get a slice of them into your life. And they're happy you're doing it now, too, because they can't go out and do tours and shows. And we've got artists like DeBrat and Tion and T-Boz. I mean, they're making people happy, and that's what they do. So give them a chance to help make you and your friends happy.
Absolutely. Well, we appreciate your information, Randy. It's always a pleasure. And we're going to have to keep on doing this because things are changing. And they're changing every 6 to 12 months. So we'll ride it through the pandemic and we'll keep people informed.
Any excuse to talk with you is welcome. So I'm ready to come back anytime you want.
All right. Thanks, Randy. Talk to you soon.
Thanks so much for listening.